It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Well, hey, we're glad you've joined us for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, Teresa, can you believe this is our final broadcast of 2013? Where's the year gone?
I don't know. We've had so much fun this year on Rose Chat Radio, and we've learned a ton. Remember all the great information that Baldo the Bugman shared with us on integrated pest management?
Oh, my goodness, yes. My bugs have never been the same.
No, they haven't. Mine either. And we had the wonderful 2014 rose introductions we've heard about. Those were great.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then there's the inspirational Peggy Martin story. There's just lots and lots to take a listen to through these cold winter months.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I hope folks will go back and listen to some of these.
Well, we now have over 70 podcasts. And they're from the world's top rose growing experts. You can access them very easily right here at blogtalkradio.com/rosechat or from our website at rosechatradio.com. And you can access them through iTunes and the Stitcher app. So lots of ways to go back and listen to all the wonderful programs.
Oh, absolutely.
And have you seen the Rose Chat coffee mugs around Facebook and Twitter? You know, they're becoming prized possessions. People are getting very excited about the Rose Chat mugs. And if you want one, just like us on Facebook and follow the conversation on Twitter for a chance to win. We'll be planning more mug giveaways really soon. And our guest tonight is Marcy Martin, and she's in the virtual studio. And after a quick break, we'll be chatting with Marcy about her love of roses, and she's going to offer us some tips on how to keep those holiday arrangements fresh this Christmas. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat Radio on your way.
It's time to order roses for spring delivery, and S&W Greenhouse has just what you need. From knockouts to hybrid teas, S&W has the best. From weeks, star roses and plants, and new this year, a beautiful collection of David Austin English roses that are sure to make your garden the envy of the neighborhood. Check them out online at sw-greenhouse.com.
Martin's with us tonight, and Marcy fell in love with roses when she was a little girl, and the love affair just goes on, because she's been growing roses for 36 years in four different locations in the state of Connecticut. She's been on the board of directors of the Connecticut Rose Society for over 15 years, where she's a past president, and she has held virtually every office in the group. Marcy is American Rose Society Consulting Rosarian, and was honored as an ARS Consulting Rosarian of the Year, as well as being a silver medal recipient for her service to the district and to the ARS. So it's such an honor to have her with us tonight. Hey, Marcy, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hi, Teresa. Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we're so glad you're here. You know, Marcy, you obviously love roses very much, and you've worked very hard for the cause of roses. So what started your interest in gardening and roses?
Well, like you said, and like I told you before, I fell in love with roses when I was a really little girl, and my grandmother was a wonderful gardener, and I had my own garden plot at her place, and she also, it used to be fun to sleep over at her house on Friday nights. She had the most gorgeous collection of Rex begonias in her living room, mm-hmm. and I got to water them on Saturday mornings. So that was a lot of fun. And she planted a few roses for my mother over the years, but my mom was not, she didn't really have a green thumb. She did okay inside with houseplants, but she didn't like bugs, and unlike Baldo and myself. So she wasn't a very good gardener, but when I was about 10 years old, we had a next-door neighbor that was an old Latvian lady, and we called her affectionately Aunt Alexandra. And she was the most incredible gardener in the whole world. She could make anything grow. And she had, she grew annuals from seeds. She grew the most gorgeous asters I ever saw every single year. She had roses all over the place. And she used to let me help her pick the roses out of the catalog. And so when she knew the rose catalog was coming, she'd send me to the mailbox. And, of course, back then, it was Jackson and Perkins. Everything was Jackson and Perkins. And you'd open the mailbox, and they printed the catalogs with rose-scented ink. So you could smell it as soon as you opened up the mailbox. And I'd go in, and I remember one year, I think it was maybe 1962 or 63, I fell in love with an orange rose. It was the first orange rose, which was Tropicana. I'm sure you've grown it. And every garden I have ever had, I have always had Tropicana in it ever since. It's just, it's still just an absolutely beautiful rose. So when I was little, she used to let me follow her around her garden and ask her anything I wanted to ask her, and she was just a wealth of knowledge, and I always knew that I would have my own rose garden someday.
Oh, what a beautiful story. You know, Marcy, when I hear stories like this, it makes me take mentoring the next generation of gardeners even more seriously. I love to have children visit my garden, and if they start asking questions, well, that really is just the best.
It really is just the best, and actually, I have a young neighbor here, and I can tell you a little bit about her, and then also about my grandson, Chris, who's 12 and is becoming quite the rosarian. But, yeah, 7-8 years ago, we had new neighbors move in next door, and there was a 7-year-old girl, and her name is Anna, and she just came over, and she started following me around, and I think the biggest secret to growing great roses is making sure that they're well hydrated. So she'd come over and ask me questions just like I used to ask Auntie questions, and just, why are you doing this and why are you doing that? And one day she got this little wrinkle right in the middle of her forehead, and she looked up at me and she said, Marcy, why are you drowning your roses? My mom says roses that perennials don't need that much water. And I said, well, roses are not perennials. Well, now Anna is 15, and she still comes over and follows me around the garden. And I guess what goes around comes around, huh?
I love that.
Yeah.
Last year, we had a 10-year-old young lady come to our garden, and I could tell she really liked it. And we have swings everywhere in our garden, and we were sitting on a swing together, and she said, and this is going to be one of my favorite all-time quotes of things that people have said about my garden, but she looked up at me and she just went, oh, you know, I need to plan a spa day here in your garden. So I think I might have a recruit there.
Oh, I think you might have a recruit too. Last summer, my grandson Chris helped me mulch the garden. He learned how to deadhead. He helps me prune. He's just awesome. And he says when he grows up, he's going to be a rosarian too. And I think that it's just something that hits you that makes you fall in love. Roses are all about love. And, I mean, they have a romantic connotation. You can look at them and touch them. And if you're a really good nurturer, if you're a really good mom or great dad or a great spouse, and you just love nurturing and doting on something, roses love all the attention you can possibly give them, as opposed to my Phalaenopsis orchids that I grow in the house, that if you give them that kind of attention, you're going to kill them in about a week.
That's so true about roses. There's roses that don't require a lot of care and some that will take all the care that you give them. I'm reminded of a quote from Jolene Adams. She said something like this, that you need to think of growing roses like having dogs. You can have a fluffy dog or you can have a poodle, and you can get special grooming and you can paint their fingernails or little toenails, or you can take it as far as you want to. And I think that's true with roses. We can have a rose or we can have a rose.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely true. There is everything you can possibly think of on the market right now. And hybridizers do listen to people. People did not want to spray their roses anymore. And so we have, of course, Bill Radler and his wonderful knockout series of roses. And his new roses that he's doing now, too, he's got one that's really pretty called Milwaukee's Calatrava that's got a nice fragrance to it. And then there's Ping Lim. Do you know Ping? Ping, I love Ping. He's just awesome. And he has brought beautiful, clean roses to the garden that are different from knockouts. They look more like real roses, whereas sometimes I think knockout roses look more like a dogwood blossom on rose foliage. But Ping's roses are big and fully double, a lot of them. Their disease resistance is very, very good on most of them. There's a few that get a little bit of black spot. But it all depends on how much you want to put up with in your garden, too. Like if a rose gets some black spot in October, I don't care. You know, it's the end of the season and roses are deciduous and you rake up the leaves and you're all done with it. But Ping's got a rose out called Sweet Fragrance, and you know that the gene for fragrance and the gene for propensity for disease go hand in hand. So that's why, you know, people say, oh, there's no fragrance in roses anymore. First of all, that's not true. But second of all, if you want a really heavily fragranced rose, chances are you're going to have to spray that rose if you want it to keep its foliage through the summer. And it's because of that genetic thing. But Ping took this rose. It's the most beautiful, glowing orange, fully double, a nice, healthy, beautiful shrub, and it's got a great fragrance, and it's called Sweet Fragrance, and you really ought to look for that one. It's pretty.
Where do you think we might find that one?
Ping's roses, you can always email Ping if you want to, if you're interested in being able to find his roses, but his roses are marketed by Bailey's Nurseries in Minnesota. And the other thing about Ping's roses is that he's like bred disease out of them, and they've gone through their test period in the tundra in Minnesota. They get planted in the ground. They don't get watered. They don't get sprayed. They don't get any winter protection. And if you live in Minnesota, it's pretty doggone cold, and if you want to hang on to hybrid teas up there, you have to do a Minnesota tip, you know, dig your trench and lay your rose down and bury it. And I love roses with all my heart, but I'm afraid I would never do that. So
it would take some fortitude, wouldn't it?
I think it probably would. So, you know, roses that can make it through that and still be disease resistant and still wake up in the spring are really quite special. So, you know, you should look for those Easy Elegance roses. That's the brand of his rose, Easy Elegance.
Thanks for that good tip. Marcy, at this time of year, so many of us have live flowers and greenery indoors, but as wonderful as those fresh arrangements are, they always seem to fade way too fast. So we'd love to hear your tips on keeping those arrangements fresh throughout the season.
Okay. Well, the first thing you can do is go outside, go down to the florist shop and pick up a couple bars of Oasis. That's that green foam stuff, and it's got some holes in the bottom of it. You take a bucket and fill it with warm water and soak that Oasis until it's really, really heavy. And then pick out a dish that you'd like to make an arrangement in. And then go out in your yard and cut some greens, cut some holly, cut some pine, anything that you like. They make gorgeous winter arrangements, and you can make them yourself. The one thing about picking them up at the grocery store or picking them up at the florist shop is you don't know how long ago they were put together and how long they've just been sitting there. But if you make it yourself fresh, then it'll last right through the holiday season. What I usually do is I make a green arrangement first. It's gorgeous all by itself, just with like white pine and red pine and hemlock and whatever else you have around. And you make a nice rounded arrangement. Then you can go and pick up some mini carnations, or you can pick up some roses down at the florist shop. And you bring them home and you condition them before you use them. That means you get your greens all set up first, and you take your roses and you cut them in between nodes under running water and stick them right up to their necks in a bucket of water that's warm, warm, warm water, and put it down in the basement overnight and just let it sit in the dark. Come morning, bring it upstairs, make your cuts, and put your roses in that oasis with your greens or your mini carns or whatever else you want to use. Make sure that you keep the water fresh in there. Fill up your container every single day. If you do roses in an arrangement, then you'll want to probably change the water every couple of days. One year I got arranged roses, and they sent them with all different kinds of foliage that was down right inside the water, which looked really pretty. But you want to avoid doing that because the foliage starts to decompose really quickly, and then it poisons the water, and then your necks are going to droop on your blooms. So make sure there's no foliage underneath the level of the water. Use floral preservative. That works well, too. And when you arrange your roses, when you take them from the conditioned bucket and arrange them in a vase, make sure that you make your fresh cut. Do it on a diagonal so that there's a bigger area to take the water up the stem, and put warm water in the vase with floral preservative. And they should last for you for a couple of weeks.
In the winter, that's such a wonderful gift to have fresh flowers in the house.
It really is. If you ever have a droopy neck, has that ever happened to you when somebody sent you roses?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's caused by a little air bubble, a little aneurysm that gets caught in there. So you can usually fix that by taking a pin and sticking it right under the petals, right into that globular portion under the petals, poke a hole in there, do a fresh cut on your stem, and put it in water as hot as you can stand it. And the hot water will go up the stem by convection. That air bubble will go right out that hole you made, and your rose should stand right back up again.
What a great tip. I have never heard that.
You know what? Yeah, people think that it's magic when it happens, and it is kind of magic, I think.
Good magic, good garden magic. Well, great tips. Well, we're going to have a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to chat more with Marcy on her love of roses. So stay tuned.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
We're back with rose lover extraordinaire Marcy Martin. Marcy, how many roses do you have in your garden?
You know, I used to tell people it was 150 plus until my husband said to me, I know there's over 200 roses out there. So there's over 200, but to tell you the truth, I haven't counted them lately. You realize that this love of roses is an addiction. And when something, I was lucky enough to be a double ARS test judge at Elizabeth Park for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to see roses that were in the trials for the double ARS way before they came out on the market. And that was the most marvelous thing. It was just really great. So I was planning like 5 years in advance. I'm going to have to make room for this one, and I'm going to have to make room for that one. So there's a lot of them, and I grow everything.
So you have a combination of all the different kinds of roses?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Well, Marcy, I can tell you that when I hit 20 roses in my garden, and I have a very small subdivision lot, my wife says, "Now, Chris, you've got 20. We just don't have any room for any more."
Oh, there's always room.
Yeah, and I think the last time I counted, which was probably back in October, there was about 175 here.
Woo!
And I'm hot on your heels on the count.
I always say 175, and Mr. G's always saying your count is way off. Last week we had Jill Haston on the show, and I loved what she said. I've thought about it a million times since last week. I said, "Well, how many roses are you going to plant?" Because she's planted quite a few. She's got lots and lots of land, and she said, "I've decided I'm going to plant enough, as long as I can deadhead them in a day." And I thought, could I deadhead all of mine in a day? I'm just not sure. But I think she has about 200 too. But
yeah.
Anyway, I thought, well, maybe that's a good benchmark for me. How long does it take to deadhead them?
I'm in trouble then.
I think I might be in there too.
Yeah, I'm in trouble. There's no way I can deadhead all my gardens in one day. So, and if I could, then I'd figure, wow, if I can do all this in one day, I can have more gardens.
I love the way you think, don't you, Chris?
Oh, I do. I just knew it was the right thing to have you on this show.
Oh, gee.
You've moved into being a rose friend to being an enabler.
Right.
And we like that about you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love people and I love roses, and I'm not sure which I love better. I think they're all like entangled with each other. And when we first moved here 13 years ago, I left a rose garden behind in the town we left, and there were over 100 roses blooming there. And I had a pot garden here the first summer. I brought 27 roses with me, and I had a lot of work to do inside the house because it's an old house. It was built in 1920, and it needed paint and paper and TLC. So I grew these roses in these great big pots for that summer, and then they spent their first winter on my screened-in porch, and then we were off and running after that. But there had never been any gardens here, and I have people now that walk by and wave and stop to talk. I have people that blow me kisses from their car. I have people that pull in my driveway. I've gotten a lot of new members for Connecticut Rose Society this way.
Oh, that's great.
If my front door is open, people know I'm home, and they can get a garden tour and a house tour if I've had time to vacuum.
That sounds awesome. With of all the roses you grow and all the ones you've come in contact with, I'm sure, like most of us who love roses, you've got some favorites. We'd love to hear what some of your favorites are.
Oh, that's really tough. I am a sucker for that perfect hybrid tea form. I exhibit in Connecticut Rose Society's Rose Show, but I don't grow roses to be an exhibitor, although I know a lot of rosarians who do just grow roses to exhibit. And most of them are guys, and they're really, really, really competitive. You know what? As each rose comes out, I went through an old garden rose period, and I have antique roses from then. I've always loved the hybrid teas. I've always loved Floribundas. I've always had minis. Now I'm crazy about mini floras. I would have to say that I'm really crazy this year about Powerhouse. Do you grow Powerhouse? It's one of Frank Benardella's mini floras.
No, I don't.
This rose is exquisite. I can see it from across the street. It's a mini flora. It looks like a perfect little hybrid tea. The bloom probably is maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches across. It is the most electric orange I have ever seen. It's listed in the American Rose Society handbook as a red orange, and I guess it kind of is. But it's just brilliant, and I happened to win Mini Flora Queen with that at our rose show this year.
Oh my gosh! No wonder it's a favorite.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you. And Mini Floras are, you know, the hybridizers that used to create these roses used to have to throw them out because there was no classification for them. And they were too small to be Florabundas. They were too big to be miniatures. And for a lot of mini rose growers, they are like exhibitors, and they want to win Mini Queen with them and stuff like that. So the American Rose Society created this new thing called Mini Floras so that they could start marketing these roses, and somehow we've got to make them more available to the public. They are much easier to deadhead than mini roses are because they're in most cases they're bigger rose bushes, so there's less bending or kneeling involved to deadhead them. And the blossoms are just perfect. They remind me of the sweetheart roses that were in my bouquet at my junior prom. they're just absolutely lovely. Another beautiful one is Leading Lady. Amy Grant, you guys are friends with Robbie Tucker. That's one of his roses.
Oh,
Amy Grant. Yeah, Amy Grant is a beautiful rose. And my favorite hybrid tea, I believe I sent you a picture of Falling in Love.
Oh, yes, that was so pretty.
You know, we've had so many comments on social media about that rose. People are like, what is that? Where can we get that?
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's one of Tom Carruth's creations. And I first met that rose when I was evaluating roses at Elizabeth Park. And I watched that rose for 2 years, and I said, oh. And when it hit the catalogs, I said, that's it. That's the one. And I loved it that he named it Falling in Love. Mm-hmm. It needs a little extra coddling, and it likes a little extra water. And here in Connecticut, I always recommend to people, because we regularly go below zero in the wintertime, if you always bury your bud union deep in colder areas of the country, then even if you don't have time to go out and winter protect and mound up and stuff, you can cut that rose right down to the ground if you need to in the spring, and it'll come right back bigger and stronger than ever. Number one, because it's got a mature root system after the first season, so you've got an established root system. You've got your bud union that's buried in the ground, so it's protected. Plus, you've got 3 or 4 inches of protected cane and all those buds underground that'll send up all nice big basal breaks, and you'll have grand success in your garden if you plant your roses deep, if you're in a colder area of the country. You, Chris, where you live, do you need to plant your roses with the bud unions above ground?
Yes, we do not bury our bud unions at all, and they do wonderful. Now, we do have some roses that grown this far north, really, on Fortuniana, and, you know, you have to kind of winter protect those. They're very sensitive, but most of mine are on Dr. Huey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you bud roses yourself also?
No, I've never tried that. Would love to.
Oh, yeah? Come on over.
Yeah.
Don't invite us if you don't want us to come, because
you could. I'm going to do some budding workshops this coming summer. Here in Connecticut, we do our budding in August. So my friend John Mattia and I, he came over to visit one day last week, and we put up about 100 sticks for rootstock for next year, and I use Rosa multiflora for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would love to know more about that. Keep us informed.
I sure will. I have to tell you, it's so much fun, and I've been doing it for a number of years now, and it's still a miracle every time it happens, because within the first season, you have, first of all, they're called budded maidens once the bud takes, and I just love that name. Isn't that pretty?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I grow them in large pots for the first year so that they can get a good solid root system going in the pots. I had some hot princess out there. My friend John gave me a bunch of budwood from his garden. So I had grand success. And from one bud that starts in April, by the end of the season when I cut them back and put them away in my unheated garage for the winter, some of them were 6 feet tall.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, with four good canes. Yeah.
Oh. My
yep.
goodness!
Yeah, lots
yeah.
Of fun.
I definitely need the. I definitely need your class.
Well, I'll let you know. Sorry.
Yeah, I'd love to. No, no, you're fine. I'd love to know when you're going to do that, and we need to get together and talk about it some more.
Sure. I'll be sure.
Maybe you can get someone to video it, we can put it on YouTube or someplace so that we can see you.
Yep, we could do that too. I'll keep you posted.
Oh, yeah, please do. I wanted to ask you, you talked about mini floras, and I love that variety of rose myself. Have you seen this new mini flora by David Clemens called Tammy Clemens?
No, I haven't. I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
Very pretty.
I'm having a little rose envy. I think Teresa got one.
I went to our district meeting, and they had them for sale, and I went, oh, my gosh, give me that.
Uh-huh.
And it had three beautiful, and that was late in the year, and it had three beautiful blooms on it. I mean, just perfect form. Beautiful.
Oh, lovely. They are the most delightful things. I just think they're beautiful. They're beautiful.
Okay, I'll just talk about the beauty of roses. I've got a question for you. I'm interested to know what's been the biggest problems you've dealt with in growing roses, and I ask that because this year I hit my biggest problem. I had rose midge, and I can hardly even say the word. And I was just interested to know some of the problems that you've dealt with and what you did about them.
Well, I've dealt with everything. I've had rose midge. I've had western flower thrips, which in 2010 we had a drought in the summertime. It was really, really hot. My water bill for that quarter was like $250 because I was just out there watering constantly. And our piece of property that we have like an acre of land, and the backyard goes downhill like in terraces until there's like a meadow, and then there's some pine trees and there's a boarding school out behind us. That meadow down at the bottom of the hill is full of wildflowers. There's Queen Anne's lace and goldenrod and daisies and you name it. It's all wildflowers. It's really, really pretty, but thrips go crazy for stuff like that. And my backyard is on the east side, and it was so hot that summer. Actually, Baldo came for a visit here that summer, and I took him around and showed him, and he goes, oh, yeah, you got him. I said, I know I got him. What do I do about it? But it was so hot that you could feel these puffs of heat just like poof, poof, coming right up the hill. And then they hit the garden at the back side of the house. That was the garden that had them the worst. And just looking inside the blooms, people must think I'm nuts or something, but I have this little jeweler's loop, and I'm constantly looking because I think it's good to know your enemies. So here I am, like, looking inside the flowers, and I could see these thrips in there, and they're just so teeny little rasping buggers. They're just so nasty. But you can have four or five different instars in one bloom and, you know, thousands of them in there, all different stages of development. And they were different colors in different roses. And I thought, oh, no, I hope these aren't chili thrips. So I'm lucky enough that we have the agricultural station right here in Windsor. And so I just took blooms, and I put them in Ziploc bags, and I brought them over, and we looked at them underneath the big microscope that they have, and they will change colors depending upon what blossom they're in, but I was afraid they might be chili thrips that had taken a ride up from Florida on some bird or something, and they turned out to be Western flower thrips. Those are really hard to get rid of. The midge is really hard to get rid of, too. Did you know that I thought that midge and thrips were kind of a new thing, but they're not. They've been around forever.
No. And
Back in olden times, to get rid of those things because they pupate in the top inch of soil, you used to go to your local tobacco farmer and get tobacco leaves and lay them down in the beds, and the nicotine would kill them after they were finished pupating when they were emerging from the soil. So I have actually thought about doing that because I live right in Connecticut's Tobacco Valley, and we grow broadleaf shade tobacco here, which is used for rolling some of the finest cigars in the world. So if I have a huge problem with them again, I might try that, and I'll let you know how it works. But
Please do.
But we have Japanese beetles and grubs, and what's up with those cucumber beetles? Don't they know they're supposed to eat cucumbers and not roses?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, there's
Go
ahead, Teresa.
Did you have fewer Japanese beetles this year? We had decidedly fewer. This was our leanest year by far.
No, I don't think we had fewer. We have all these hybrid beetles now, too. I think the Japanese beetles are, there's way too much sex going on with beetles, okay? And they keep crossing with each other. And so we have, and they're all scarab beetles. They look like, when I was a girl, the older girls than I was always had these scarab bracelets that they'd wear. And they're all scarab beetles. They're the Japanese beetles. There's some black ones. There's a brown hybrid, brownish gray that's got like spiderweb markings on its wing covers. And they all do the same amount of damage. But those guys, the best thing to get rid of them is, well, if you want to use an insecticide in the ground, you can put down some Merit or something like that. But if you're going to use imidacloprid, you have to make sure that you apply that just before or during a significant rain event, because it gets chemically bound up with the organics in the soil, and in order for it to work, it's got to get down into the root system. So lots and lots of water if you're going to use Merit to kill the grubs, which will kill the beetles, but not the first set of beetles that come out, because if they're pupating, nothing's going to get them. So, yeah, we've had it all. And the voles. Do you have deer in your garden, Teresa?
Well, we've seen a few tracks, but for some reason, and I don't know why, we haven't had any deer damage. There are deer in the area, and I know it's just a matter of time, but no, we have not had deer in the garden yet.
Good. That's good. I have not had trouble with deer here. I did when we lived in Glastonbury, but here I have wild onion in my grass, and when they step into the yard, they step on it and they don't like the smell and they turn around and they leave.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well,
yeah, so
that's a bonus.
Plant more onions?
Yeah, well, these are wild onions, you know, they look like chives, and when we first moved here, I was like, oh, no, never get rid of those. It's, like, absolutely impossible. But what happens is they come up twice a year and they go dormant twice a year. So when the deer are browsing around looking for their summertime roots, they do that early in the spring. These wild onions have sprouted. They're the first thing to come up in the springtime. They're up in the end of February. And so when they step on it, they go away, and then they're up again in the fall, and same thing happens. When the deer are looking for their fall and winter browsing roots, they step on it, and they turn around and leave, and they don't bother me anymore.
We've got a comment from in our chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, folks log in and chat during the show. One of our listeners from Northern Ohio said she had a few Japanese beetles late in the summer, but she said there are cucumber beetles. They came in September and October. She said they liked her dahlias better than her roses.
Well, yeah, dahlias are awfully showy, so beetles and cucumber beetles will go for your dahlias.
Oh, dahlias. Absolutely.
My girlfriend Andrea calls dahlias the harlots of the garden.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Marcy, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, we talked a lot about roses, our love for roses, and some of the issues that you can encounter just being outdoors in the garden. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your work as a consulting rosarian for the American Rose Society and about what that entails. I know we've got listeners tonight who are, you know, just getting started growing roses. They'd love to know what that program's about.
The Consulting Rosarian program is really a wonderful thing for people like me that I'm just a total and utter rose nut, and I want to share anything I can with people to help them grow roses, because roses make me happy and people make me happy, and I like to make other people happy. So grow roses. That'll be good for your soul. And so the American Rose Society set up this consulting rosarian program a number of years ago so that people could study and learn how to grow roses well and share with anyone who was interested. And CRs, if somebody calls me up and says, I'm having trouble with my garden, could you come over and take a look? I always go, and there's no charge for that. And it's basically just sharing rose knowledge with people, keeping it as simple as possible. Roses got a reputation back a long time ago of being difficult to grow, and they really aren't. And they're good, strong, healthy plants. They want to live. They will survive unless you run into voles running around underneath the ground, chewing them off and stuff like that. But CRs are here to help anybody who has a question. And so CRs are also very, very active with their local Rose Society and with their districts. And if you are interested in finding out who your local CRs are, you can find that out through the ARS website. You just go on there and follow the prompts and find your state, and you can get the help that you need there. Rose culture is different all across the country. Chris, where you live, it's much warmer, and I know down in Florida they have a problem with nematodes that attack the bud union, so they have to plant their roses high. Different kinds of soil can make a difference, and so what you want to do is find a consulting rosarian that's in your area so that they can tell you exactly what to do where you live.
So it's definitely a more localized approach. So you're just
absolutely
not getting that broad spectrum of advice. You can connect with someone who's growing probably not very far from where you live.
That's exactly right. And a really good thing to do if you want to grow roses is to find out when and where your local Rose Society meets. And most every Rose Society has their own website. Ours is ctrose.org. And districts also. And they all list who your local consulting rosarians are. But really, I think everyone should join a Rose Society. It's amazing the camaraderie. We're all like family, and we love getting new family members, just like every family does. Back in the olden days when I started growing roses, I knew nothing about the American Rose Society. I knew nothing. There was no Connecticut Rose Society back then. Got our first house when I was 25, and I was thrilled because there was a rose garden right there already. And I thought, wow, this is great. Saw the house in April and bought it, and we moved in June. And when we moved in, all the roses were dead, and they probably had been for years. They weren't dormant like I thought. So I went down to my local nursery, and I bought 6 new rose bushes, and I brought them home, and I planted them, and I mixed peat moss with the soil, and I put cow manure in there, and I just mixed it all up and planted these roses, and they were really lovely. First bloom came and went. Then the Japanese beetles showed up, and so Japanese beetle traps were brand new back then. I went back down to my local nursery, and I got this Japanese beetle trap that was like a green tin can with yellow fins on the top, and I stuck it on a bracket right in the middle of my rose garden. I figured, great, I'll get them. Well, later on that fall, all my neighbors told me, gee, we had a lot fewer Japanese beetles this year, and it's because I attracted all of them right into my rose garden. And then the first winter came, and not knowing, I mean, just reading that when you plant a potted shrub, you should plant it at the same level that it's planted in the nursery pot, I planted all my roses with the bud unions sticking up about 6 inches, and that winter they all died.
Oh, God, that they did.
Yep. And I said, I think maybe I did something wrong. So I went back to my local nursery, which is actually, I'm their rosarian now. This is Woodland Gardens in Manchester, Connecticut. And talked to old Mr. Zapatka, and he's the one that told me, bury your roses deep. And so that's what I did, and I have not lost a rose to winter since. And I also have not ever put a Japanese beetle trap in my garden ever again.
Good advice.
Yes. So maybe, Teresa, maybe one of your neighbors put a Japanese beetle trap in, you know, maybe
a mile
away.
That'd be a good Christmas present for my neighbor.
Yeah. I've been giving them out as gifts for years.
Martha, you sort of touched on it, some advice for our new rose gardeners. We've got lots of new rose gardeners that follow along. And so what would be some of your top advice for those that are new to rose gardening?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Join the American Rose Society and join your local rose society, and then that way there's no reason for anybody to fly by the seat of their pants like I did. And that's one thing about being a rosarian. The love of the bloom is so huge that you are doggedly determined to succeed. And you will, but if you join your local rose society, you won't kill as many roses on the way as I did.
So true. Well, I want to be sure that our listeners know where they can find out more about your articles and your podcast. Just go to planterplace.com.
Right.
Go ahead.
Plantersplace.com. Yep. And my blog is called Everything Roses. And you
There's
can click
just
on.
There's a wealth of knowledge there.
Well, it was a lot of fun writing it, and actually I owe another one, so I'll probably do that tomorrow. But plantersplace.com, and for those folks who like all kinds of other plants, there's other blogs there, and there's other podcasts that you can download and listen in the car when you're on your way someplace and learn how to garden just while you're driving. It's a lot of fun. There's a houseplant thing, kitchen gardening, pests. There's all kinds of information there for anyone who's interested. And it's owned by the Osmocote Company.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's great. Well, for our listeners who go there, please don't miss the podcast, Marcy's podcast, Murder in the Rose Garden. Marcy deals with, she's already kind of mentioned, the dreaded voles. Marcy, I take it that you've not had the best experience with voles.
No, I didn't have the best experience with voles. That actually was the winter of 2010, and I should have known I had a problem because I had the wheelbarrow out in the side yard, and I was bringing wood onto the back porch to stack it up for the winter time so I wouldn't have to go out when I wanted to build a fire. And I rolled over the grass right by the back steps, and all of a sudden I heard squeak, 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 and there were like six bulls that shot out of the ground like boom, 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 and they were all yelling at me, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good, but it never dawned on me that they could cause as much trouble as they did. I probably lost a dozen roses that winter. Come springtime, when it was time to prune, I had a beautiful Paris de Saint-Laurent. Paris de Saint-Laurent is a hybrid tea that was a florist rose that jumped into the garden. And I brought this rose with me from Glastonbury. I had it for a number of years. It was just beautiful. I went to prune it, and it fell over. It was chewed right through the shank, completely girdled and chewed right. It looked like my grandfather when he used to take a stick and his pocket knife and just whittle it right down to a point. And that was really bad. That one I took to the ag station, and they took it out on their lectures to show people what it looks like when you have a bad vole problem. Zephyrine Druin, who was going up over the roof, started to sprout and then quit. And I said, oh, no, and I went over. Sure enough, the shank underground was probably 4 inches across. They ate the whole thing. Then went in the garage. I always keep potted roses in the garage because I go speak at libraries and garden clubs and stuff like that. I just think I love getting the word of the rose out there, so I always like to make sure I have something that I can take with me. And the voles went over the sill of the garage, got into the garage, and got into the bottom shelves where the roses were stored. They couldn't get into the top shelves. They got into the pots, tunneled around, completely stripped all the green skin, and exposed the cambium layer of the entire rose. The roses looked like ghost roses. They were pure white cambium, and there's nothing you can do. They're dead. Same thing, shanks cut through. So how do you get rid of voles? It's by the time you see that you have vole damage, you probably have millions of them, and they're underground critters, although they're not blind, and they don't like vibrations. So, but don't go out and get those vibrating sticks in the ground because those don't work. Trust me, I tried them. our neighbors had a new driveway put in, and that's when I started seeing voles in the garden. So there's poison stuff that you can put down there, but I don't like using that. I have cats, and when I was growing up, there was so much DDT that was used around here that we had no raptors at all, and I love the hawks and the owls and the peregrines and all that kind of stuff, and the chemicals that we can get, like Moltox or something like that, the critters have to feed on it like 5 times before it kills them. So all I could think of was, what if some hawk came and picked this thing up and took it home to feed it to his babies and killed all the babies? So I won't use that. I found the best way to get rid of them, well, actually the best way to get rid of them is to have your own new driveway put in, which we did, and then they did finally go away. But kitty cats are the best. I mean, I tried everything. I threw mothballs down there. You know what they do when you throw mothballs in? They throw them back at you. They come right back out of the hole right at you. I found that inverted flower pots, they like to make their runways like right next to garden edging or foundations or sidewalks, and they're smaller runways than moles are. Moles have really powerful shoulders, and they push up like tons of earth with their shoulders. These are smaller. So you either look for an air hole or you make a little air hole, and then you set a mouse trap and you bait it with peanut butter and oatmeal and cover it over with a flower pot and then put a brick on top of it so that a bird can't get in there or kitty can't knock it over or something. And you wait for the snap, and then you bury the bodies. So, and the snap is a very fine feeling when you hear that. My husband used to go out on the... Yeah, trap lines every single night, but they have between 3 and 9 babies, and they start breeding when they're 6 weeks old, and every 6 weeks give birth to more babies, and then their babies are giving birth to babies, and once you get that many of them, they're like really difficult to get rid of. But the mouse traps worked. The kitties worked really well. I believe there's a picture on my blog site of the murder in the rose garden. That was great. That was great. Yeah,
well,
they're no fun.
Well, thank you for sharing about your displeasure with the moles. That will teach us all a lot so that we can keep our gardens fairly mole-free. I have to tell you that this fall we started seeing mole runs. So I'm suspecting that the 2014 growing season is going to be interesting as we deal with those little guys because they have their own brand of damage.
Yeah, they do. They do. The first time I had trouble with voles was many, many years ago. I had spent like $150 on spring bulbs, and I had planted them. And excuse me, the crocuses came up with their little green tops, and then they quit. And I'm like, what happened? And I bent over and I touched, and it fell right down into the hole and disappeared. And so I called my dad. My father was a zoologist, and I said, Dad, some moles came and they ate all my spring bulbs. And he said, nope. He said, that's not moles. Moles are carnivores. Voles are omnivores. They will eat insects, but mostly they eat plant life. And they like to girdle your bushes and stuff. Moles' favorite food is earthworms. Their second favorite food is grubs. So one thing you can do for grubs that really, really works, Teresa, is putting down milky spore disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's an all-organic thing. It works really great. The only thing it hurts is white grubs, and you still apply it the same way. I wound up using it way, way, way back in my first garden. And every 4 steps, you drop a tablespoon. So every 4 square feet, you drop a tablespoon of this stuff. And it spreads through the ground. You water it in. And as the grubs are munching on your grass roots and whatever else they eat, they ingest some of this stuff, and it turns their blood a milky color. And then they swell and they explode, and they spread more of this stuff around. So it works well. It lasts for years. It travels under driveways and sidewalks, and you can pretty much eradicate your Japanese beetles. Maybe some of your neighbors use that, and that's why you didn't have so many beetles this year.
Maybe.
And I have another idea, too, because to get back to the thrips and the midge for a little while, up until last year, we had like 6 really warm winters. Things are changing around here, and really warm winters, and the ground never froze. Last year, we had a real winter for a change, and there was probably 5 inches of frost in the ground, and there were way fewer midge and thrips this year. Way
maybe
fewer.
They didn't freeze out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they're in that top inch of soil. If it never freezes, then they're going to make it through. But this year looks pretty good because November here was more like February, and December so far has been more like January. So hopefully they've been dispatched to midge and thrip heaven.
That's where we like them.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, Marcy, it's been a great pleasure to have you with us. And we hope that you have a very Merry Christmas and keep posting pictures on Facebook. We love seeing your flowers and your garden.
Oh, I hope you can come and visit them in person sometime.
Oh, that would be so wonderful.
I would love it.
Sounds like a road trip to me.
Hey, Chris, it would be awesome.
It would. We'd have a big time.
Yeah. Well, thanks again so much for inviting me, and I hope you have a wonderful evening, and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Thank
you. Merry Christmas
you.
To you, too.
Thank you.
Well, Rose friends, it's hard to believe we're at the end of another broadcast, and another year of Rose Chat. But we'll be back in January with more great news and more information from the world of roses, and we hope you'll join along. And until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.
Birmingham, Alabama. Cool.
Hey there, that was pretty cool. Are you there?